The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Engage with Andy Bush. In order to stay ahead in business, you need to be on the pulse of the business world, current news, and politics. We'll provide the thought-provoking topics and show you where we have been, what's next, and what it means for you at home. Life's complicated. Let Andy help you figure it out. Now, here is your host, Andy Bush.
Welcome to our energy edition of Engage. I'm your host and filter, Andy Bush. You know, over the last month, world oil markets have plunged due to a combination of lower demand via lower economic growth and higher supply via the continued resurgence of American oil production. Now, this week, I want to review energy policy, energy tax policy, and market dynamics to get a clearer view of the energy picture. In this segment, we're going to cover policy. And joining us to discuss is one of the best policy experts out there. It's Jim Lussier from Capital Alpha Partners in Washington, D.C. Mr. Lussier, welcome back to Engage.
Well, Andy, it's always good to be here.
Thanks. All right, Jim, you cover all things energy policy for Cap Alpha. You know, one of the biggest stories in policy land right now is the export ban on crude oil. At the July EIA conference, Vice Chair of IHS Daniel Yergin said, "Lifting the ban on crude oil exports would signal the U.S. government's commitment to global markets and energy security. The U.S. has preached to other countries for decades about the need for free flow of resources. How can we say to Japan that it can't import any of our LNG but must buy Iran's oil? Why is the U.S. not exporting oil now?"
That's a good question, Andy. I think it's purely risk-averse behavior. U.S. politicians, both Republicans and Democrats, and certainly in the White House, think that the general public is not ready to export crude oil. But the fact is, the Washington, D.C. intelligentsia understands Dan Yergin's argument. We had Larry Summers, formerly President Obama's chief economic advisor, formerly Bill Clinton's Secretary of the Treasury,
right.
President of Harvard, the man who would be Fed chairman, just 2 weeks ago, saying that it was undisputably in the U.S. national interest that we should export oil. In fact, he said that some numbers that show that the net present value of full liberalization of export this year would be about 1 percentage point of GDP. He said that that was probably understating the reality.
Wow.
And he said that when he was busy at the IMF as a top U.S. official there, he used to condition lots of loans to developing countries, bailing them out of budget difficulties and balance of payments problems, but on the condition that they eliminated export bans.
Amazing.
We haven't got a legal leg to stand on. We have a treaty obligation. We took the Chinese to the WTO to combat their refusal to export rare earths to us.
Great
so
example.
I think
Great
that
example.
The dam is getting ready to burst.
All right. So what are the important events, rulings, and timelines on this thing? I know that, I'm sorry, and I didn't mean to interrupt. That was a key point he was making, ladies and gentlemen, before I rudely interrupted him. He thinks the dam's going to break. In other words, you think this is going to change.
I do think it's going to change because it's clearly unsustainable. The problem is that we're at the tail end of the presidential cycle, and President Obama doesn't have a lot of time left to do big new things. And I also think that because of his political base in the green wing of the Democratic Party, he's not exactly persuaded by the Larry Summerses of the world. So I think full liberalization probably has to wait until the next president. And indeed, one could look at Summers' speech as a way of making it safe for Hillary to go all the way on exports. What we might get perhaps mid-year would be liberalization of the types of crude that we can export now. We currently have a lot of very light crude being produced. It's called condensate. And the administration may change the definition of crude oil so that at least this very light product that doesn't fit well in U.S. refineries could be exported.
Well, that would be great news. And you know what, ladies and gentlemen, if Jim's right, then we'll start hearing about this starting next year as the 2016 presidential election campaigns start rolling. So that'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, you know, and Andy, I think we might get some data points even sooner, because I believe that major decisions at the White House are on hold until after the election.
Mm-hmm.
But there are two big reports coming out this month. We actually expected them in September, but now the word from the Energy Information Administration is that we will get them this month. Actually, somewhat surprisingly, before the election.
Mm-hmm.
Report number one is going to be the first government study of whether crude oil exports will have any impact on domestic gasoline prices.
Right.
That's probably going to be a positive report. We know that exports drive the world price of oil down. That is the Brent price of oil.
Right.
And the Brent price is the price that sets the price of retail gasoline. So mechanically, there's every reason to believe that exports do, in fact, drive gasoline prices down. Then, of course, the other report will look at the refining complex in the U.S. and its ability to handle heavy versus light crude. And it will highlight the reality now that we have giant multi-billion dollar refineries built to handle heavy, sticky crude from Mexico, Venezuela, and Alberta. We've got the world's best heavy refineries. The problem is they don't work very well with the super, super light stuff that's coming out of Texas now.
Mm-hmm.
Texas is now producing a billion barrels of oil a year, a billion.
Wow.
That is tripled in the last 5 years, and two-thirds of that increase happens to be this super light oil.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting, and you mentioned the study about of the influence of U.S. exports on the overall gasoline prices. Brent sets the price for crude, as you mentioned, but what's interesting, obviously, and I want to get to this point because it's cool, what is happening as far as lower oil prices, would that change the outlook for lifting the ban? I mean, one of the things that you look for is that narrowing of the West Texas Intermediate and Brent, and if that narrows significantly, then that would lead one to believe that that would be a good thing for exports and lifting the ban.
The thing that we actually worry about actually is not a narrowing of the differential, it's a widening of the differential.
Oh, sorry, right, I meant widening,
if,
right.
If U.S. producers can't get the same price that other crude producers are getting worldwide.
Right, of course.
And at the moment, that differential is surprisingly close for a couple of reasons. Number one, Cushing is net short right now, which is the big oil storage terminal. Number two, there are a couple of pipelines doing fills. So that's sort of raising the U.S. price a little bit. But also, I think we've got a depressed global price for oil, in part because of U.S. production, but also because of slower demand in China, slower demand in Europe, and
right.
Some of the OPEC nations coming back on. I mean, mm-hmm. Saudi is increasing production. Libya has actually surprised with their ability to produce a little more than we thought.
Right.
But, Andy, the key overall pattern is that outside the U.S. in the past couple of years, world production has basically dropped 3 million barrels a day, while U.S. production has increased 3 million barrels a day. So it almost exactly balances, notwithstanding the smaller changes we've seen in the past couple of weeks and months.
Mm-hmm.
And this means that the U.S. consumer is not getting the normal price signal that he or she gets when the Mideast is on fire as it is now.
Yes. Yes.
You could argue that in past days, we'd be looking at $5 gasoline now.
At least 130 Brent, if not 150. So
exactly. Nigeria, Libya, Iraq,
right.
You can just go down the rogues gallery.
How about Russia, Ukraine? I mean, all
yeah.
of that, right, adds
yeah.
to this.
Yeah.
And this gets to Juergen's point about being able to export the oil. He also, mm-hmm. at that meeting, U.S. House Representative Upton made the point
yeah.
of using energy as a diplomatic tool, which I think is really good. All right, let's kind of get into that. I want to talk about what's
okay,
interesting.
Well, I can tell you that I was actually at both speeches sitting in the front row. But,
were you? All right,
yeah.
Well, let's go with that. I mean, the hell with my questions. What did you come away, Upton was speaking, and this is important. Why do we care about this guy, Jim? Because he's the head of what important committee
He's the chairman of the Energy Committee.
Chairman of the Energy Committee, ladies and gentlemen. So he's putting forward a outlook, a vision for what U.S. energy policy should be. And so, Jim, since you were there, what were your key takeaways when you sat there and listened to him?
The key takeaway is that if you start with Jurgen, who says that exports are inevitable and probably is right, I think he reflects the overall state of elite opinion in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
But Upton is a guy who has to get reelected every 2 years, and I think he's got a more cautious view. So what Upton talked about was finishing Keystone XL. He talked about LNG exports. He talked about a lot of incremental steps.
Mm-hmm.
But he thought that Congress wasn't quite ready for the big step in exporting, which means that I think we'll have a big debate about this on the Hill next year.
Interesting. And, well, I'm glad you brought up LNG. So now let me get to the question I was going to get to, which
sure.
is, what's interesting to me is that natural gas has no official export ban, but has something like 12 LNG terminal approvals waiting for FERC review. I mean, isn't this really an example of a de facto go-slow ban for nat gas?
I think you can argue that, and it's definitely the case at the Energy Department, where the Energy mm-hmm. Department literally did nothing. They sat on their hands and spun their wheels for 2.5 years, claiming to study this and study that, studying stuff for which they had no statutory mandate to study.
Nice.
And I think that's created needless uncertainty about permitting and exports. But more recently, the Energy Department, as of May, has said that, okay, we're changing policy. We're not going to try to second-guess all this stuff. We're basically just going to give a final export permit to companies that get through the FERC engineering and architectural review. What you get from FERC is not an export permit. It's called a combined operating license, which is a license to construct, to build, to operate an LNG terminal. And the FERC process does involve environmental reviews, involves double-checking the engineering work, it involves disaster planning.
Yeah.
It costs about $100 million to get through FERC because you got to do all the engineering. I mean, sadly, I speak as somebody from D.C., that $100 million is not all going to lawyers. You do have to pay some engineers and technicians and people like that.
Right.
But I think the good news is that having wasted 2.5 years, the Energy Department is, I think, stepping aside, and we do have FERC doing these big infrastructure projects in a relatively expeditious manner. So I'm hoping that we can see over the next year or so a steady flow of engineering approvals from FERC so that 2 years late we can get this LNG in the market. The good news, although I hate to say good news because it's bad news for our friends in Canada, Canada had kind of been ahead of the game in getting terminals approved to serve the Asian market on their west coast in British
right.
Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
There were actually 17 projects proposed in British Columbia, but
wow.
all of those seem to be running into tax issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Greenie government in British Columbia can't decide what its tax plan is going to be, and the First Nations want a piece of the action, and the municipalities want a piece of the action.
Right.
So even though here in the States we allowed the Energy Department to slow walk the process for a while,
right.
it looks like we'll still be able to slip by those crafty Canadians and get terminals on the marketplace first.
So the good news is, and we just have like 30 seconds left, the good news is,
yeah.
is that the process is starting to speed up for these LNG terminals. Dominion Cove Point, I think, is a good example of that.
Yeah, the process is speeding up. Probably the single best piece of news is that Cove Point did get approved.
Mm-hmm.
That's outside the Gulf. That is a state where you have a Democratic governor who aspires to run for president someday. If there was one terminal, one greenfield site that the environmental groups could have stopped, it was Cove Point, and they didn't.
Mm.
So just as the enviro groups failed to stop Cove Point, I see that as a green light for LNG exports. We could also mention fracking briefly in the last few sections. You know, the statewide election
yeah,
in Colorado.
In Colorado.
Were the
okay.
last best chance to have a frack ban that would succeed, and that one failed as well. So there's a lot of good things happening.
Oh, that's great. All right, Mr. Lucier from Capital Alpha Partners in D.C., it is always awesome to have you on the show. Thanks for coming on today.
Thank you, Andy. Bye-bye.
All right, let's take a break. You're listening to a special Engage on Energy. I'm Andy Bush. We'll be right back.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
Game-changing technologies and strategies are transformational, exciting, and disruptive for a reason. They shake up your status quo. They get you thinking about new ways to scale, compete, and grow. They move you in amazing new directions. You're invited to take your coffee break with Game Changers on Mondays at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time for our special series on today's top HR trends. Learn how you can become the savvy HR innovator who takes your company across the finish line as you look ahead to the future of work. HR Trends with Game Changers, presented by SAP on the Business Channel.
Do you know your personal brand? You may have the idea, but do you really know how to execute it and perfect it? Join Kathy Bass, the Branding Lady, for an inside look at the world of branding on her show, Power Up Branding. Kathy and her guests will discuss the many facets of branding, including tips to help you rebrand or bring your brand to the next level. Power Up Branding can be heard live every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Get a plan.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.